to Homo in Leitraning. I'm Jay Daye, and Leslie is around here somewhere because I just remembered that I didn't do an intro. So I'm like, girl, let me just do an intro here real quick. So this episode, it's going to be about a day in a life in Palestine because our friend Casey, who has been on the podcast a kajillion trillion times, actually went there for like a while to like do some missionary work. No, not missionary. He did some work abroad. He'll say it in the fucking episode. But it's really interesting because obviously there's a lot of fake news about how life is in Palestine and how everything is so hunky-dory and everything is so perfect, whatever, whatever. So it was good to hear about someone's experience who's actually been there, feet on the ground, can actually explain kind of the difficulties that daily life was. And he was there like a while ago, so it's changed a lot since he's been there, but it still gives you a glimpse into kind of what the people are going through. And, you know, we're going to keep talking about it. It's just part of what is going on, the reality of the world, and some people don't like it, but we just are going to talk about it. So I hope you enjoy this episode because it's actually really insightful. It's a really good episode. I think you'll enjoy it. We're here. We're here. We're queer. And we're pro-Palestine.
Yes,
just point blank period. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. But we're here with a crowd favorite, someone who we love, who loves us, who made time for us. Thank you so much. I know your day was very busy, wet, and cold, which I'm sure was not enjoyable.
Yes, and he's talking about rain.
Not the other thing.
You can call it whatever you want to. But we're here with Casey.
Hi, Casey.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me back.
You're welcome. You know, I got a little text from you where you were like, I'm upset with your Palestine episode and I'd like to redo it.
Right. I found it really problematic.
And we brought an expert. Someone who was born in Palestine.
No, don't say any of that. Don't say any of that.
Put respect on Palestine. So
no, it was a good episode. I listened to y'all's Palestine episode and I really, really liked it. But I know that before I listened to it, I was like, I wanted to do a Pally episode with you guys.
Yeah.
But honestly, y'all did a really good job. I really liked it.
Thank you, Casey.
Thank you so much.
We wanted to bring Casey not only because he's a crowd favorite, but because he has a few little things to add from our first episode that we did, mostly specifically because he's been on the ground. He's been on the field. And I really want you to walk us through back in year, whatever that year was, where you went and did incredible work in Palestine. And more so, I had mentioned to you off the record that I wanted to really get your perspective, which we'll dive into, where the optics are he's a white man, but he's actually half white. The optics show that he's a white man. And I think Casey always stands really tall and true, and he is an activist. And so he found himself in Palestine doing really cool work, and I think him sharing his experience and then us being able to kind of sprinkle how that was X amount of years ago and how now to know that what's happening there is just, we can't fathom, right? So take it away, Casey. Tell us what year it was. fill us in a little bit. Kind of why you decided, though. Because you had told me a long time ago why, but I want you to say it.
And I forgot.
Yes. He even forgot you went to Palestine.
Yeah, it didn't even register because Leslie was like,
till like a week ago when you messaged us, I was like, you know, he was in Palestine, so he would have been. Why did we not hit him up?
That's pretty funny. And I forgot that that's what you told me. I just like, I went somewhere in Arabia. I don't know.
Arabia, girl. here on these social medias.
Is that pretty funny?
Yes,
it is.
But you heard it here first, people. But yeah, well, let me just talk about me first, because when talking about this stuff, who is speaking and the identities is really important. Leslie talked about it a little bit. She called me an activist.
You are an activist.
I'm not an activist. I'm activated. Like, this stuff is important to me, and I listen to activists. But I don't know if I'm an activist. I guess I have to work on that, like, think of what that word means.
Okay.
And I'm white passing. I'm half white American. My dad's Irish, Polish, and then my mom.
Irish.
Irish. my mom is a Vietnamese boat person from the 70s.
Yeah.
So my interests, like, in international solidarity and what it means, like, to be a minority and all these issues kind of start with that heritage from my mom's side, really. Mm-hmm. And now I work in the nonprofit sector, and I have a bachelor's in political science. So nothing wild. But I did spend the summer, I think it was 2018, mm-hmm. I did 4 months in Palestine.
4 months doing what?
So it's nothing crazy. I wasn't out here saving the world, but my mom and her family are refugees. Mm-hmm. And at the time in my life, not so much anymore, but that as an identifier was, like, really important. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, an avenue of empathy for me. And the Syrian refugee crisis had started. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time, there was, like, 40 million displaced Syrians. It was the biggest number of any population in the world. Mm-hmm. And I was about to graduate college. And I was like, well, what do I want to do? I want to do some kind of refugee work. Mm-hmm. That didn't really work out long term. I don't do refugee work now. I still do immigration work, but not really refugee work. Which is fine, because there's even more tiers of intersections of groups who are not having access to resources. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it got to the point where I was like, well, I need skill sets to work with Syrian refugees. And I was like, well, I need to learn Arabic. And this was a very much like a white privilege kind of fuck up moment for me. Like, I shouldn't have done what I did. But what I did was I Googled like work opportunities in the Middle East so I could go and immerse myself, really not knowing or doing my due diligence of research or anything like that. And I did end up finding a program in Al-Khalil, which is also referred to as Hebron, but that's the Hebrew word for it. It also used in English, but Al-Khalil is the appropriate Arabic name. And they were scouting internationals to work in their English plus professional prep program for people within the city of Al-Khalil and the surrounding villages. And I thought this was my opportunity to prepare myself for, you know, being of service during the Syrian refugee crisis. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a correct assumption on my part at all. Most people should do way more research before diving into a situation like that.
Wait, so why is that problematic, though?
Because Palestine is in the middle of a military occupation completely unrelated to the Syrian refugee crisis. And the reality is I put myself and my body in danger ultimately for in the mix of an issue that I had not taken the due diligence to understand. Mm. I had been aware of the Palestine conflict for like my whole adult life, maybe late high school. I have been pro-Palestine since that time as well. But, you know, not me coming from Southern California to the Middle East, all bright-eyed and like, let's do it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it don't look great. Mm-hmm. But I definitely don't regret it at all. And if I were any other person, it might have gone much worse.
So you can just Google working in the Middle East and things come up?
Yeah.
That's so...
There's a lot of, like...
Can I work somewhere else?
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, refuge programs and organizations that are actively looking for people to just help, like volunteer, to just do a lot of things that you normally wouldn't hear. Like, think about it, like, go teach English. Like, here you have to have some sort of credential or something to teach anything. But right, like in the Middle East or like just countries that don't have the resources, they'll really just kind of take anyone who's willing to go in there and just be like, you know, I don't know, this is how you do this or whatever. Specifically with like English, I think. But I've seen positions where it's like, be like an aide, like a nurse aide. And they'll just take whoever because they just need whoever is willing to go and immerse themselves in that and go like, I don't know, like clean wounds. They'll probably give you a like 1-3 orientation. They're like, all right, let's go.
Not just that though, because they're smart. They know like, as Westerners, we have, like, as like, aware and activated Westerners, we have, like, an ego, and then there's the savior complex. So yep, they scout us on purpose.
Yeah.
You know, maybe even branding in that direction. But what they're really after is attracting foreign attention. in general. Like, having a staff of foreign teachers looks really good for, like, a nonprofit in the middle of Al Khalil.
Really?
Uh-huh. Not only that, if their students pass through their program that's run by all foreigners, that helps their international, their international, how viable they are to apply for jobs internationally and achieve a higher income bracket than if they stayed working within their country. That's why it was like a professional prep program coupled with the English thing as well. But they really were after our privilege. I think, I mean, good.
Yeah, you can have it. So you do it, you book your tickets. When did you realize you were going into a war-torn country?
I mean, so I knew that there was an apartheid situation because that language is out there.
And what's an apartheid for people that don't know?
Apartheid is legalized segregation and discrimination as practiced in South Africa up until the late 90s.
Early 90s, somewhere in the 90s.
Yeah, what was the color of friendship from the Disney Channel movie?
Oh my god, the color of friendship, you guys. Such a good movie. Such a good movie. It radicalizes us all. We're all communist. It's great.
So good. So good.
So I knew it was, I thought it was an apartheid situation. I knew there was segregation and discrimination and like a general history of the region, but wasn't until I was there talking to like elders and professors that I get a more comprehensive look. And then plus that, like, there's patterns, like global patterns of occupation and colonialization that, like, even here, you know, our experience in the US, I'm just like, I'm sure a lot of this kind of carries over.
Yeah.
And then there's the power of, like, the U.S. passport. Flashing that, like, people will get out of your way, you know. And that's our reality of the world. That's our privilege, ladies and gentlemen.
So, like, being, like, very pro-Palestine that you are, like, did it, you being there, make you, like, more, like, aware of it? Or were you kind of, because you said you knew it since you got out of high school. Right? Is that what you said?
Yeah, around that era.
Around that time. Like, did being there give you, like, the empowerment to want to look in more and more and more? Or did you, like, how did that work?
So, I mean, essentially, when I'm off the clock, I'm a tourist. And ethical tourism is, like, really big for me personally. My friends hate me for it because they're like, we can't travel with you. You don't want to rent here. You don't want to use this business. But I'm just like, you guys, if there's a resort, there's indigenous people, and if there's indigenous people that are oppressed, we can't contribute. You know, so that was really important to me as well. But I also, like I said, like I was activated in high school politically. Like, that's a term I use when that's when I started analyzing things politically and in the context of power. I know I was talking about it with Leslie, like, when do we start getting activated? So these conversations were already on my head, and, you know, I had to learn over time that not everyone is thinking about, you know, power or who's this affecting, or, like, why is this easy for me versus other people? Like, these are important conversations, I think. But going to Palestine was even more humbling because it's, like, theory was, I mean, not total theory because I'm a queer individual, mixed-race individual, and I've had my experiences with oppression because of that, but it's so much more visceral because I don't have, like, the buffer of Americanness or whiteness, or I do have the buffer of Americanness or whiteness to insulate a lot of those oppressions. When you get to a place like Palestine, like, it's very much a microcosm of global oppression happening really fast right in front of you in a much smaller space. And when you get there, even though I'm pro-Palestine, because, you know, I have an educational background, I'm white passing, you know, I have all these things, I have legal status, you know, on paper, I'm more one-to-one with an Israeli than I am a Palestinian. But that won't stop me from being in solidarity with Palestinians, just because on paper, I relate to the Israeli more.
So you're pro-Israel?
Definitely.
That's all the way. Crazy. Zionism. Zionism is sexy.
Talk a little bit more, Casey, about, so you were there 4 months, and then when you were off the clock, you were, like, out and about. I know you connected with, like, folks there. So what was that like? You know, did they tell you, like, stories about, like, the first Nakba, or, I don't know, did they just share stuff with you? Did they, anyone kind of say, like, do you know what's going on? Like, does America know what's going on? Like, does anyone care? Like, were those conversations happening, or what was that like to just kind of witness, as you mentioned, like that global oppression, like basically zoomed in and actively happening in your surroundings?
Yeah. Or is it like North Korea where everyone's just a robot?
Well, wait, that's a lot of questions. We did have real conversations about what's going on. There is this sense, well, so we rented out apartments in the city and we all worked. It's called the Excellence Center. It's really good. Medcas Excellence. Like, it's a great, great, great place. They do great work. They have offices there and in Germany as well.
Germany?
Uh-huh. They expanded to Germany to work with the diaspora.
Work.
Yeah. And there's like this wall up a little bit between the Palestinian staff and the foreigners. So it was like 50-50, I would say, or maybe even a few more foreigners than Palestinians. And foreigners were mostly Europeans of some kind, mm-hmm. or like POC migrants to Europe who are then also. And then like a spattering of Americans. Because Europe is like a 2-hour plane ride.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's quick.
they can just pop on by, yeah, and it's kind of wild.
They should be volunteering more on the hook.
Uh-huh. And there's like a niceness that the Palestinian staff have to us, but you could tell like they don't know to trust us yet in terms of like a deep political conversation. Mm-hmm. And like walls are up and all this kind of stuff like that. And most of the foreign teachers did not participate in nightlife. Like they wouldn't leave their apartments after they got out of work and kind of stuff like that. But I'm not here to be an ugly American, right? I'm trying to be. I'm here to meet people. I'm here to, like, this is my time off work. It's nightlife, so I would go out and kind of like go and try to make friends and use my Arabic and like all this other stuff. And the Palestinian staff noticed that, so we started forging more genuine relationships. And more to the point, I needed Wi-Fi to text home. So when I'm walking and I want to text on WhatsApp, I'd stop at a bank and use their public Wi-Fi or something like that. And it was nighttime. And I got approached by these two guys. They're both named Mohammed.
Ooh.
We called them the Mohammedaini, which means double Mohammed. And one of them was like very much an academic. He was in college and all this other kind of stuff. They were best friends. And then the other one, he was more like, he was very, very hood rat. Very much like, he had his thick pomade in. He had his little sports car that he couldn't afford. And he had his little trophy wife somewhere out there. And he's from a neighborhood that the told us not to ever go to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting being able to talk with like each of their friend groups about stuff like that. And like the academia would definitely talk about it the way, you know, like politically minded, intelligent people here would talk about it. And they would just talk about like generations of oppression and all this other stuff. While like the other half of the folks, they are really more, they would express their frustrations, right? But they're more concerned about the 9-to-5 and then having fun once they're off kind of thing. So it was more getting to know people and stuff like that. But there was a screening of of course they're all anti-Israel. Of mm-hmm. course they wish that Israel as a state did not exist.
Now, I was going to say, like, so were you, when you were there, were you in Israel? Were you in the Palestine? Like, how does that work? Like, I know there are sections that they like took over and stuff, and like checkpoints, I think, is what they had and stuff. Like, were you in Palestine or like were you in Israel? Because like, I guess I'm just confused on like what is that. I guess I don't know how an apartheid works. Like, how you can have legal segregation, but then they're all there working together. I don't know.
So it's not just an apartheid; it's also a military occupation, which means even the areas that are Palestinian are controlled by Israel.
Okay,
but the whole thing is Palestine. You know, Israel's presence is illegal. They're yeah. under international law. They should not be a country. They should not have established, you know, a separate body from, you know, the existing folks, all this other crazy stuff. But how it works is basically I bought a ticket to Tel Aviv, which is in Israel.
Mm. I've heard of her.
She's been around, especially in the gay community.
Mm.
And I landed in Israel-controlled area in Tel Aviv. And I was actually detained at the airport for 6 hours. Because I had a beard. What they had told me was they thought I was radicalizing for Islam and like mm-hmm. had come to be a terrorist and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm not really sure what, yeah, I don't really know what that served because they just held me for 6 hours and let me go.
I thought Jewish people have beards too.
It was untrimmed.
Oh, okay.
And like a lot of Islamic traditions won't have you trimming beards and stuff. So that's kind of what they thought was happening.
Oh, okay.
Or that's the profile they had pegged me with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and they want to discourage touring of Palestinian territories in general. Like, you know, and he's like, oh, why aren't you here to teach Israeli children or da 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 da? Because I was stupid and I said the truth. Oh, I'm here to teach in an Arabic student program, Palestinian program, da 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 da. And they're like, but what about our students? What's wrong with us?
Really?
Yeah, it was part of the interview. He was,
what?
He was really upset that a foreigner was coming to come to teach Palestinians and all this other stuff. So I was just detained and eventually he let me go. And then I kind of fucked up where I didn't really understand the instructions, but there's like a specific taxi you can take who have a pass to pass through the different territories. And I was supposed to take that to go to the West Bank, which is where Al-Khalil is, which is a Palestinian territory governed by the Palestinian Authority, but is actually controlled by the Israeli military, the IDF. I took the wrong bus, and I ended up in the middle of an Israeli settlement in the West Bank. And I had to pass through a military checkpoint to leave and then find my... I don't even know how I found...
So scary.
Yeah.
That's scary. It's well, because I guess when I say were you in Israel and Palestine, I just mean that when you look at a map of the occupation of Palestine, you see the green. You see the parts that are taken over by Israel. That's what I mean. Like, I don't know where you are and how it works there.
Right. I was in the West Bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is that little lima bean shape on
that's,
the map.
That's... Okay, that is...
Yeah, cool. On the maps, that shows, like, how is... the Israelis or whatever started taking over, they left only like two patches, which is Gaza and then the West Bank and I think some other little part. But then you see how Israel basically expanded into their state.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the Palestinian. Mind you, everything is Palestine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
of
what we've established. But can you talk a little bit about the checkpoints and all of that and what that's like? Because you saw that. So what does that mean for people? So let's say... someone from the West Bank wants to go to Tel Aviv. Is that a thing?
No.
Absolutely not.
No. Okay. Unless you're like working transportation or for the government and you're given like, I think it's like a special green colored card. It might not be green.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have permission to leave the Palestinian territory.
That was designated for them or whatever.
Yeah, there's ways to apply and all these weird types of things, but there's really no feasible way.
Yeah, yeah. So someone that... a Palestinian needs to go to Tel Aviv for whatever reason, if they would want to kind of like apply the rigorous process or whatever, there's multiple checkpoints, right? From West Bank to Tel Aviv. And what usually happens at those checkpoints? Do they question you? Do they search you? What are you carrying? How many questions do they ask? Like, they beat you up, you give them money, say, let me pass. Is that a thing?
Well, there's like a diverse, you know, set of types of checkpoints you could encounter. Like an obvious one to think about is the Bethlehem checkpoint, which is that massive wall that shows up in a lot of photographs and videos talking about the occupation of Palestine.
Bethlehem.
Yes,
Bethlehem.
Was that the same wall that they, on October 7th, that they pushed down?
No.
That wasn't it?
Okay. No. It's a huge wall that separates the Palestinian territory, quote unquote, from the Israeli territory. And there's, like, this massive, like, you ever been to El Paso?
Mm-hmm.
It's that type of checkpoint, very militarized, metal detectors, da-da-da-da. That kind of checkpoint, though, in Bethlehem, Palestinians need to pass through for business. Like, that wall is super inconvenient. It doesn't protect anyone, doesn't regulate anything. We all got to pass through it. Everyone got to pass through it, and it takes hours and hours and hours. And you better have your documents ready. I have an American passport. That counts. Another one is like the ones that monitor the roads, because there's roads controlled by Israel and then there's roads designated for Palestinians, which are the shitty tiny roads that wind through the mountains. So there'll be checkpoints on those to make sure you have your little card showing that you can pass between Palestinian and Israeli territories. And then there's the type of checkpoints that exist because there's Israeli settlements inside Palestinian cities. Israeli settlements being illegal settlements that are popping up in the middle of Palestinian communities, pushing out violently those who are already there. In Al-Khalil, the city is separated into H1, H2, but I can't remember which of those is the Israeli half, which of those is the Palestinian half.
Mm-hmm.
that checkpoint we had to deal with regularly. That one, you know, you have your soldiers there. They have their guns up. They're really bored. They're kind of useless. They might give you extra harassment based on how you look or if they're bored, but they're really, their job is nothing. They're monitoring a door that is really just a sidewalk. People pass through because they have business to do. I have my passport, boom, 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 they let us through or whatever. But they're just this two really young, like 20-year-olds, looking angry, but really that anger is fear because here they are in this weird situation holding their guns, mm-hmm. guarding this way in. Mm-hmm. And then part of that divide between H1 and H2 cuts through the Ibrahimi Mosque, which is a really, really famous and holy site for Muslims. And half the mosque, because the territory line draws through it, is converted into a synagogue. True. Meaning the mosque itself is militarized. Wow. And there's this wall, and there's soldiers monitoring people's worship and all this other stuff. And there even was a few instances, or maybe many instances, of settlers taking over the whole mosque for certain instances just to show their violent power.
So, this all happened because, like, of Hitler? Kind of. Like, is this why? Mm-hmm. So they were like, we feel bad for you guys, like, here.
I think Casey can speak more to it, but... Yeah, I mean, basically, it's like, this is going to go on a separate tangent, but I think it makes sense. I have a theory that a lot of the reason, other than people in the USA, you know, kind of letting other people talk for them and speak for them and think for them, is because of the Holocaust, right? It's like, well, let me not say, like, Israel's, like, not a thing, because it's like, the Holocaust happened. And I think that there's this big theory for me that I see that it's like, because that was such a horrible thing that happened. Like, let me not speak on anything that folks are saying about, like, Israeli and being Jewish and, like, it's our birthright. Because it's, like, I wasn't there to say something when the Holocaust was happening. So let me just not even, like, let me stand back. Mm. Right? And so, yes, I think that because of... the powers that be way, way back then, which literally is fucking happening right now. Yeah, the USA, when finally they decided to be like, hey, that's kind of fucked up. Yeah, okay. And then, you know, the UK and US and France and all those fucking countries were like, you know, yes, they should have a place. Mm-hmm. Not here. Not here, but somewhere else. And we're gonna help make that happen, because how could we let this happen? Like, how? Mm-hmm. And so,
plus they didn't want them around.
Yeah, period. It's like, we don't want them to kind of settle here.
People don't know this, but, like, France was way more anti-Semitic than Germany before World War II. Mm. Like, publicly, in their politics. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they were one of the big ones that signed off, which, right, adds to your point of, like, they were anti-Semitic and very, like, the big point, yeah, what Casey's kind of pointing out is, like, they're not going to be here. Like, you know, Hitler was doing something, and we're going to still kind of support that vision, but not publicly kill these people like he did. So we're just going to push them and tell them that, yes, you're right. You have somewhere to go, and it's here, and we're going to fund it completely. We're going to support it. We're going to post it on the newspapers, and we are going to publicly say, like, we recognize that state is your guys's. Here's all the money, and actually here's all the passports that you guys need. And actually, if you want to come back, you're more than welcome. Dual citizenship, like, let's do it. Bon voyage. Bang voyage. That's how I understand it. I think Casey can eloquently maybe say more about it, but my theory about why a lot of people in the USA or elsewhere are like,
probably on the left, too.
Yeah, let me not step on anyone's toes, even if they're Zionist as hell, because, like, what happened was horrible. So, like,
yeah,
let me not be that person.
Yeah, I'm not trying to read, and, like, they're talking about, like, the Ottoman
Empire.
Ottoman period. But then it says, like, Ottoman Syria. Like, so is Palestine Syria? I'm just so confused. Like, there's just so much going on in the Middle East. Like, Jesus Christ, leave them alone. Jeez. Like, I just don't understand. There's so many words.
Well, everything Leslie said was true.
Oh.
But there's more that even mm-hmm. connects it to oppression here in the States and colonization here. Mm. So Palestine has not been an independent country I mean, they've been occupied by foreign powers, I want to say, for like over 2,500 years.
Even during Jesus.
So how it worked was Ottoman Empire was, they're, what is left of them is Turkey. Mm-hmm. And once upon a time, Turkey had an imperial colonistic empire called Ottoman Empire. Mm-hmm. And they ran most of the Arab countries, including what is today Palestine. They lost World War One.
Yes, mm-hmm. I read that.
Booted.
Then the Germans took over, right? Or something like that?
So now you have all these colonies and no empire controlling mm-hmm. them. The League of Nations create the mandate system. Mandate is colony rebranded. Okay.
Great British mandate.
Right. Great Britain had mandates. Countries all over the world were converting colonies into mandates.
Okay.
And on paper, the good thing of a mandate was to transition a colony into an independent, liberated state. But what it ended up becoming was a transition period between imperial colonialism and modern capitalism. Mm. So there was no real liberation. There was just subjugation under this new color.
Transfer of powers, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the British Mandate of Jordan was under British control. And, you know, Britain is not known for treating any of their colonies and or mandates well. Like, their purpose for these colonies are either to exert international power or to scrape resources from. Mm-hmm. So then there's something called the Jewish question, which is actually a really problematic phrase. Mm-hmm. And people are like, what do we do about the Jews? Because people can't handle the existence of minorities. Mm-hmm. So they're like, well, what if we resettle them in our mandate, create a settlement program? This is not an immigration program, right? Mm-hmm. This is not refugees integrating into Palestinian society. Mm-hmm. This is a militarized movement to establish a bastion of Western alliances smack dab in the middle of the Middle East that would forever be on the United States and Great Britain's side, mm-hmm. regardless of the state of the surrounding countries. This was an investment in military control for the future for all time, mm-hmm. at the cost of the locals. Mm-hmm. And they're not the only mandate like this. They're all over the world. Mm-hmm. But it is the most famous one.
Really well said. You did that
very well said. Bitch, like, I'm out here learning.
So the ties that we have to Palestine, like, as USA Americans and benefiting, our country benefiting from the power that they hold over Israel, why should people care? Because I was talking to you off the record, kind of talking about how I've known about Palestine for probably for like the last like 8 years. And you asked when I got politically activated. It was probably like towards the end of like my college studies. And I think for me, it was mostly like, I was kind of really doing like a deep dive into like religion and spirituality. And I trying to identify, right? Like, going on my passage, right, of like, you know, Catholicism, you know, I'm not doing that. And so really wanting to figure out like, you know, what's out there, and I have a choice because I'm an adult and I can make choices and I can find a religion or faith or something that really I didn't identify with. And so the reason that I have been really invested in the Middle East was because of Islam. And so people's faith, and specifically the commitment and the intensity of their unwavering faith that I had never seen before. And I was completely moved by it. Like, never before have I seen people so committed, disciplined, and so very much just devoted, you know, to their religion and the four pillars or the pillars. And, I don't know. I really, really resonated with like being so devoted to something to the point that, you know, you have America labeling anything to do with the Middle East as terrorism. Like, don't fuck with it. Islam is actually really bad. Like, you know, that they actually, like, when they chant or when they pray, they're praying for like us to die. And I started connecting everything to like 9/11 and like the rage and everything that happened after then, it kind of started just connecting a lot of things. And so I obviously ran into Palestine because they're Muslim, and a good portion of them. And, you know, you have the Christians and the other religions.
There's a lot, actually.
In there and stuff. So I remember kind of just reading about people still praying so much And even through occupation, even seeing it now, how people are dying as martyrs and just holding on to their faith as in, like, you know, Allah is really just, they're just showing us, like, what we can. Like, this is only a stepping stone to, like, it's insane. Can't talk about it too much. I'll get emotional. Anyways, so I found kind of, like, little niche. So I actually knew about the Syrian stuff as well, Syrian stuff. I knew about the displacement, and I knew about Yemen, and also the humanitarian crisis that was happening over there, and people starving, children starving. Like, the reason that children were dying was because they're starving. And so really did a dive there, and I was like, oh, my gosh. And started connecting a lot of the coups that were happening, too. And they were happening a lot in America. And then, you know, then finding out that USA was funding all these coups and was having Israel puppets.
You mean the CIA coups?
Yeah, the CIA coups, yeah. Okay. And then Israel was also like the puppets. You know, they're like, we need you to go do this in South America. And so all of that really to say that that's how I came across it. And that's where I was like, this is really fucked up. I was like, oh my gosh, you know. And so I was kind of ignorant around that time too, because I was like, Israel, like, what? Like, are they different than Jewish people? Because, like, aren't Jewish people, like, nice? I was like, haven't they been through something horrible, right? Mm. And that's kind of just, like, thinking that, like, the oppressed can't become the oppressor, like, back then, thinking, you know.
All right.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
You're, like, very binary. Very
yeah, like, I was like, they surely can't, you know. And then I started reading about, like, Zionism, which actually, like, went over my head a little bit. Because it's, like, an extreme movement. Blah, 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 blah. Anyways. So, going back to all that, that's when I got politically activated. That's how I came to know about this. I deeply care because I think that being the daughter of two immigrants that also have a lot of ties in Mexico and also seeing a lot of the oppressed people in Mexico, and then you have the indigenous people and folks and the colonization that took place over there. And knowing that the struggle is very connected, I think that's why I identify with it a lot. That I'm like, you know, I don't know. I think it was like when you grow up, you feel so disappointed that, like, nothing's really better. Not that it's worse than what it was, but that it's, like, still severely fractured everywhere. And to just be, like, kind of fed lies and to have to do the work to kind of dismantle, like, what you, your views, your beliefs. And I think for me, it was, like, just really eye-opening knowing that I didn't know a lot. And that there was a lot of people suffering at the expense and the cost of just because of power, just because of capitalism. Just, there's nothing more to it, really. And then people, like, still holding on to their faith. And I think those two intersections, I think, for me, were really powerful at that time and still continue to be. So with all of that being said, I, off the record, wait, what question did we talk about? Or wait, what were you asking me? Someone asked me something before I went on the tangent of, like, off the record, when did you ask me about being politically?
Girl, you left that somewhere in Mexico or the South
America? No, because I was asking you, like, well, I guess. Well,
I said something about Syria.
Oh.
And being confused and not knowing.
Was that it?
No. I think I'll connect it back to the fact of, you asked me off the record how I kind of came to know about it, so I can add my two cents in there. But I asked you off the record, and I'll ask you off on the record about, so why care, right? Mm. Like, why care?
Okay, we have to stop it right there because we get into this topic and we get into it hard because we're going to start talking about posting things about Palestine online, my feelings about it, and I get very emotional because, I don't know, dude, being political online is like a whole thing, but we're going to get into it. And it's going to be a part two to our next thoughtful moment. So thank you so much, Casey, for being on. And we'll see what's going to, that episode is going to be next time. Bye-bye.